everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for being here once again. Welcome to the Lymph Lounge, the podcast about cultivating a state of flow in our bodies and in our lives, because when it comes to the lymph, that's what it's all about. I'm your host, Genevieve, lymph naturopath and founder of the Lymph Initiatives, a well-aging and longevity institute specializing in lymphatic health solutions. I have a full lineup of topics for you today, so let's sit back and relax, because remember, this is a lounge after all. And today I am sharing with you an article I came across about lymphatic massage, and here I'm doing the quotations, because this is one of the things I'm going to be talking about when it comes to all the information that's online. We are also discussing facial expressions and how it relates to cosmetic injections and well aging. And I also have for you a short segment as part of the environmental health on pesticides. So let's get into it. Today we are beginning the episode with something I'm kind of excited to share with you. I came across an article from USA Today. I will add the link in the blog post associated with this episode and in the episode description. But it illustrates, you've been hearing me talk about all the information that's online, right? And how some information is good, some is not as good, and some is even not correct. And this is totally unscripted because I just came across this article and I have so much I want to share with you about it that I'm going to go kind of like almost line to line with you, giving my feedback and what I think of it. The title is Lymphatic Massages Are Trendy, But Should You Actually Get One? So first of all, I came across the title and I'm like, I already know that this article might not be accurate because they are using the word massage. Lymphatic drainage is not a massage. And where the confusion, I believe is from, it might not be, but there is a popular trend called Brazilian lymphatic massage or Brazilian lymph massage. And it is a massage. It's not a lymphatic technique. It is a sculpting massage, but this is just how they chose to name it. But that creates confusion because lymphatic drainage is not a massage. We do not massage the muscles. We do not use massage techniques. It is different techniques such as the scoop to help the body, to help encourage the body in moving lymph and directing lymph where we want it to go. Right off the bat, when I saw the title, I'm like, this is going to be a good one. So it starts by saying trendy wellness spaces that offer lymphatic massages often use buzzwords such as sculpt, detox, and boost your wellness. In these wellness communities, there's an underlying sentiment that this type of massage is a more natural alternative to plastic surgery, helping users to reshape parts of their body to appear slimmer or more defined. So this is the first paragraph. I'm going to agree here that yes, lymphatic massage is a buzzword. Yes. And unfortunately, it is often associated with sculpt, detox, and boost your wellness. In my many different trainings, we were always advised to stay away from using lymphatic drainage for any cosmetic claim. And I personally have never heard that it's a natural alternative to plastic surgery. And again, in all of the trainings that I have taken over the years, we are always advised to never, ever claim that it is a natural alternative to plastic surgery. It is not. Absolutely not. Okay? Then it talks about why lymphatic massage were created. And in this article, the expert mentions that it was created as a treatment for a condition called lymphedema, which is very interesting because one of my first lymphatic drainage course was the Vodder method, V-O-D-D-E-R. It's a German method, and it is the original unadulterated technique in the early 1900s. And what is interesting is the teacher back then talked a little bit about the history of the struggles that the founders had to try to promote that technique to the health industry, which wanted nothing to do with it at the beginning. They were kind of like laughing about it, apparently. But what also happened at the same time is the beauty industry back then, which was way more about wellness than it is today, especially in Europe, and What happened is the beauty industry told them, well, hey, we're interested in learning more about this. So their intention with lymphatic drainage was for more like health outcomes and to be promoted in the health and wellness industry. But it wasn't well received right off the bat. But the beauty industry at the time welcomed it with open arms. So it got a lot of steam in the beauty industry right off the bat. And at that point, the health industry kind of noticed and were like, okay, we're ready to welcome this technique, learn more about this technique, and see what it can do to help overall health. So it wasn't invented for lymphedema, but over the years, over the decades, it ended up being used a lot for lymphedema and actually being associated a lot with lymphedema. And I will tell you how I learned about lymphatic drainage actually is from lymphedema in my oncology aesthetics course in 2016. So that's how I was introduced a little bit deeper into the lymphatic system and lymphatic drainage. And one of my goals with everything that I do is to make people go back to okay. It's there to help with natural body detoxification. It does not detox for you, but it helps support your body in a better eliminating waste. And it also helps with regeneration. So yes, it is excellent for lymphedema, and lymphedema patients need it, but that is not why it was created, and there are other benefits. Then later in the article, again, lymphatic massage, also known as manual lymph drainage. It is not also known as manual lymph drainage. Lymphatic massage is not manual lymph drainage at all. I just want to reiterate that. And they go on to explain what manual lymph drainage is. And I do agree with their description. And then in the middle of the article, there is a video. It says related video leg massaging technique for everyone. And I don't think it was meant to be associated with this article, maybe, but this is where, like, I can see where people can get confused, but because it's a video and they show massage techniques, which are not lymph drainage technique, but it is thrown in the middle of an article about lymphatic drainage. So I can understand where the confusion comes from, where you start working with a real lymph therapist who does real lymphatic drainage. Because it is absolutely completely different from what the video is showing. And then they go on explaining how the lymph is reabsorbed and all that. And yes, that is excellent information. And then it moves on to how do you know if you need a lymphatic massage? And I have to say here, I absolutely agree with what the expert is saying in this article. So it goes to say, before and after photos of lymphatic massages may show the face or body looking more defined or less puffy afterwards, though experts note that this isn't a permanent change. And I agree. Those before and afters are misleading. Like they say in the article, the procedure does not change your bone structure or your weight, and it's not something that you should seek for cosmetic benefits. So lymphatic drainage is more for general health and wellness. And let me tell you, I see it all the time. Some immediate effects for wellness for clients and some long-term. And then the article ends with a nice paragraph about conditions that are not ideal for lymphatic drainage, which I agree with. So I encourage you to go check out this article if you want, and it can give you a good example of all the information that is out there. Now moving on to the next segment, and it is about several different things I have been seeing on social media lately. First, several weeks ago, there was a Selena Gomez viral video where she was being very emotional about something, and it went around and was used in memes and all that for like a week or two, and that immediately caught my attention, and it has been kind of in my head. With this is a lot of people were saying in the comments, I did check a couple of those out, that she was quote unquote faking it. Yes, she is an actress, a really good actress. And no, I don't think she was faking it. However, I want to open up a side conversation about this is when I looked at her facial expressions, the facial expressions that are supposed to show When you are that upset, we're not showing. Her face was not moving in the way that you would expect when someone is going through emotions like she was going through. So to me, this could explain why people were having a feeling like she was not being genuine. And for years, I have seen so many situations like this where we are not seeing emotions manifest on the face because of the effect of cosmetic injections. You know, it stops the muscle contractions. And just a disclaimer again, that getting cosmetic injections is a personal choice and everyone is entitled to their own choices. So if you do get them, no judgment at all. And even if you do get them and maybe you were considering stopping, you may find this information interesting. And ultimately, this is why I open up conversations about those things, because I feel like we need to talk about them. And if you are like me and not interested in them at all, well, maybe this is one more reason to not be interested in them. And this aspect of aging, you know, facial expressions, is something that deeply touches me because what a privilege to be able to show true, raw emotions through facial expressions. And lately, even I have been seeing reels where there is a side-by-side. The most recent one I have seen is comparing the beautiful facial expressions of Emilia Clarke to the absence of expression on Anne Hathaway. Both are beautiful women, but why on earth do we have to point out Emilia Clarke's beautiful, raw, and genuine facial expressions to try to sell Botox? Please. Go ahead and promote your Botox, but please leave us women who love our facial expressions and want to have facial expressions, leave us alone. There is always a lot of grief that come up for me when I see a face with beautiful movement and beautiful expressions. And it just reminds me how it is becoming less and less common, unfortunately. And this is a reminder as well that the face is supposed to move and that human communication actually heavily relies on facial cues, which is referred to as facial feedback. Go ahead and research that if you want, but it is a theory. And the theory is that our brain looks for those cues when trying to determine what is being communicated. And, you know, wrinkles are from tension. So as long as you address the tension, you should not have to worry or be afraid to move your face or having all those expressions. And over the years, I read many articles that discuss how not only not being able to achieve proper facial feedback during human interactions affect the people around you, their ability to communicate with you, but it also affects the injected person's own ability to communicate with others and understand emotions. I already knew that if you yourself cannot provide proper facial feedback, that there is no way it doesn't affect those around you. But some studies suggest that it even affects your own ability to process other people's facial feedback because you cannot replicate or reflect it back to them. So that can create unconscious breaks in communication, or it can even create mistrust, because I don't know about you, but if you are crying and being upset and the facial expressions don't match that and you barely have any, even if I want to believe you, it can be hard for my brain to believe you. So this has been on my mind the past few weeks and I wanted to come on and discuss this with you today. What are your thoughts on this? I would love to know. Leave me a comment on the blog post, perhaps the blog post associated with this podcast at lymphinitiatives.com/podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts. Now, for the last segment for today, the segment on environmental health, I want to do a mini breakdown of one of the chemical names we see being tossed around all the time, and that is pesticides. A pesticide is a catch-all term that really applies to chemicals, both natural and synthetic, that are used to kill or control pests, including insects, weeds, fungi, and rodents. And in North America, over 800 are registered for use, amounting to over 1 billion pounds applied on our food each year. So today, Let's cover where we are exposed to them, what the health issues are with them, and what the big takeaway is when it comes to pesticides. First things first, where are they found? So pesticides are not only used on food crops, actually, they are also applied to golf courses, public parks, highway shoulders and medians, public buildings, private homes, and apartment complexes. As a result, pesticide residues are now present in food, water, and air, and can easily be tracked into our home on the soles of our shoes. Living in agricultural regions typically means higher exposures as well to pesticide drift. So if we are finding them almost everywhere, what are the health concerns? So when it comes to pesticides, there are acute exposures, so high dose, and chronic exposures, low dose over a longer period of time. Agricultural workers and pest management workers, for example, are more likely to have higher acute exposures, while everyone else gets chronic low-dose exposures throughout their lives. Chronic low-dose exposure has been linked to reproductive issues, metabolic disease, respiratory illness, cancer, neurodegenerative disease, and more. And again, I am not saying this to scare you. I just want to raise more awareness. And the takeaway with all this is, again, while we cannot avoid all exposures to pesticides, we can work to lower them. So here are some tips. First, choose organic food when possible, especially for the dirty dozen, which are foods that have shown to contain the highest levels of pesticide residue, herbicides, and fungicides. And in the dirty dozen, we have strawberries, spinach, kale, nectarines, apples, grapes, peaches, cherries, pears, tomatoes, celery, and potatoes. So those are the foods to buy organic as much as possible. On the other hand, there are also foods that do not typically contain a lot of residue. And those are avocados, sweet corn, pineapple, frozen sweet peas, onion, papaya, eggplant, asparagus, kiwi, cabbage, cauliflower, cantaloupe, broccoli, mushrooms, and honeydew melon. So those can be bought non-organic if you want. But regardless if you buy organic or not, wash produce thoroughly and soak in a solution of 1 cup water to 1 cup vinegar and 1 tablespoon of baking soda. You can double or triple the recipe as needed, and you want to soak for about 12 minutes. See, that's what I mean when I say to help support your lymphatic system, sometimes it's the simple things that we do every day. Washing your produce to help reduce pesticide exposure, which means your lymphatic system doesn't have to work as hard to remove those from your body. Another great tip is to remove shoes when coming inside. There can be pesticide residue on your shoes now. Also, of course, limit the use of household pesticides, so inside and in the garden. Avoid pesticide use on pets when possible. So those are just a couple few tips that I often share with clients. And ultimately, understanding what pesticides are and where we encounter them is the first step towards protecting your health. And while the volume used annually in North America can feel overwhelming, remember that small, consistent actions such as opting for organic and being mindful of pesticide use in our personal spaces can empower us to reduce our exposure and contribute to a healthier environment for ourselves and our communities. So I hope you enjoyed the topics for today. Keep it flowing, everybody, and I will see you on the next one.